Ani, and welcome to Bomsida, an Aboriginal news magazine program that features news, current affairs, a focus on community and culture, spotlights on entertainment and great tunes, and every flavor from Aboriginal artists. I'm your host, Jennifer Ashwasage. In today's program, we'll hear all about the review of school mascots in Ontario and BC, and it's difficult for First Nation citizens to get mortgage loans on reserve. And in Ontario, one First Nation is the latest to participate in a credit program to help get housing loans for on-reserve members. And the Ganawagi Mohawk Council in Quebec is continuing its push to have non-Native residents move out of the community. Spokesperson for the Mohawk Council will tell us why those residents have been asked to leave. And a group of teachers from the Toronto Catholic District School Board are heading to Northern Ontario, and I'll tell you why later on in Bomsida. Plus, Powwow Idol is in full swing. Next week will mark the third round of votes, and there are a couple of drum groups from Canada in the running. All these stories, plus great tunes, coming your way right after the news. Here's your national Aboriginal news. School mascots in Ontario and British Columbia are being reviewed. In Ontario, the Near North District School Board Superintendent Kelly Brown says concerns over the Joe Raider mascot at Chippewa Secondary School are being taken very seriously. He says the mascot, a First Nations caricature, will be pulled and a mascot will be recreated for the school.
They have suspended the use of the mascot, and they are trying to, or they're working towards a solution that will come up with a mascot that will be respect for of any group, that it's a mascot that doesn't depict anybody in any negative way.
Meanwhile, in British Columbia, like Ontario, school boards throughout the province have been in the process of enhancing Aboriginal education. And Jane Bowie, a trustee on the Vancouver Board, has forwarded a motion to recommend a province-wide ban on Aboriginal-themed mascots. Bowie says now is the time to consider a new policy after working on developments in Aboriginal education.
It seems sort of crazy to be working in that direction and not moving out practices that aren't consistent with all those positive developments.
The motion will be brought to the annual general meeting of British Columbia's Trustee Association in late April. A University of British Columbia study shows an increased risk of infectious diseases in children of residential school survivors. The findings were released by the CEDAR Project, a Canadian Institutes of Health Research-funded study that monitors HIV and hepatitis C virus among young Aboriginal people who use drugs in the province. And according to the findings, major risk factors for HCV infection include daily injection drug use and having at least one parent who attended residential school and was involved in the child welfare system, along with being a young woman in reusing syringes. The study also found HCV infection was near young people living in Prince George than in downtown Vancouver. Patricia Spittle, a principal investigator with the CEDAR Project, says, given that Vancouver has consistently been described as an epicenter of the HIV and HCV epidemics in BC and in Canada since the early 1980s, the findings indicate the faces of the epidemics are changing. She adds, the similar rate of hepatitis C infections in Vancouver and Prince George is very concerning and may be a warning of a larger epidemic in the north in the future. The remaining non-Native residents in Ganawagi in Quebec are continuing to leave the territory after being asked to leave nearly a month ago. Media reports throughout the country called the move by the Mohawk Council of Ganawagi racist. But in response to that, Joe Delarond, spokesperson for the Mohawk Council, says the community is living according to its own law and trying to preserve its culture.
The community has said time and time again that we're worried about losing language and culture. And as such, the influx that of non-Native people that we would see should we just allow things to go the way they were going was going to overwhelm our culture and language.
Delarond says the policy is not racist, it's about residency. The community near Montreal has a population of nearly 8,000 members on its 13,000-acre territory. 26 non-Native residents were handed letters requesting them to leave the territory on January 22nd. Batchewana First Nation is the latest community in Ontario to be approved for the First Nations Market Housing Fund Credit Enhancement Program. Deborah Taylor is the executive director, and she says the program means First Nation citizens on reserve will have an easier time to apply for a mortgage loan.
If an individual goes to borrow from the bank, they usually pledge their land and their house as collateral. But on reserve, that can't happen. And so what we've tried to do is find an alternate way to attract lenders to lend to First Nation people who are qualified but are living on reserve or on settlement lands where appropriate.
The program began more than 3 years ago. Badgewanna First Nation is the fourth community to participate in the Credit Enhancement Program and the first in Ontario. Funding for the organization was established by the Government of Canada and the Canada Mortgage and Housing Corporation. It's expected the $300 million fund has the capability of leveraging up to $3 billion to help secure financing for 25,000 new homes over 10 years. The Lake Huron Anishinaabeg Transmission Company is vying to take an ownership stake in part of Hydro One's $2.3 billion plan for 20 new transmission projects. The province announced the plan last September, releasing a map showing proposed transmission arteries that would run east from Sault Ste. Marie to Sudbury with a link to Manitoulin Island, south from Sudbury to Toronto, and a link in the northwest between Nipigon and Wawa. Serpent River First Nation Chief Isidore Day is the chair of the company's board. Day told the Globe and Mail the company is going to seek to obtain the full benefit of all major transmission lines in the treaty territory. The province's announcement promised opportunities for Aboriginal participation, but no specifics. And Day says First Nation communities have plenty of people who can do the work, but they're also talking with non-Aboriginal firms to help manage the projects. Meanwhile, a spokesperson for Hydro One confirmed preliminary talks are underway with the company and said Hydro One is interested in working with Aboriginal people on the transmission projects. The project is expected to create 20,000 jobs. Students attending the First Nations University of Canada will continue to receive their education. First Nation and government leaders have pulled the university back from closing its doors. Rob Norris, Saskatchewan's Minister of Education, says a new model for the school is being looked at. The new structure would include either the University of Regina, head up administration of FNUC, or another educational institute, and funding from both levels of government would also be rerouted through the U of Regina. More meetings between the Ministry of Education and the Federation of Saskatchewan Indian Nations are expected to take place next week. The Assembly of Manitoba Chiefs is eyeing downtown Winnipeg for its legislature and administration building. Grand Chief Ron Evans told the Winnipeg Free Press AMC officials have talked to Centre Venture Development Corporation, the city's downtown development agency, about several possible sites for an urban reserve that would include a governance house. The AMC had to look for a new site after Long Plain First Nation said in December it was going in a different direction with the redevelopment of a property it owns on Madison Street. But the new band council rejected the plan and is now looking at rehabilitating an old 30,000 square foot office building to turn it into offices and businesses for First Nations. Evans says the AMC is looking downtown because it's a central location and would be closer to many of the people and organizations it regularly deals with. But for the project to go ahead, it has to find a First Nation in the province which is willing to establish an urban reserve or economic development zone in the area. Evans adds the AMC has been talking to several First Nation communities, but he wouldn't say which ones. And the world champion Russian ice skaters Oksana Domnina and Maxim Shabalin aren't saying whether they have changed their Aborigine-themed Olympic routine. The routine angered some Australian Aborigine groups when they found out about the Paris routine. Shabalin says people will have to wait and see on the day of the skate. He told reporters after ire over their dance, their coach did more research and spoke with specialists in Aboriginal dance. Shabalin says the dance was not only to represent Aboriginal culture, but was to include elements of Southeast Asian culture as well. The theme for this year's skate at the Winter Olympics is country folk. And that's your National Aboriginal
Cherokee
News.
Girl, I know this world is not our friend, but I sense an optimism that this feeling that I have might end. Now patience is a gift we must afford, but patience is expensive when you haven't anymore. I hope it's not too late to learn. Cherokee girl, it seemed our timing was too late. Another season trying, now we've lost it by mistake. We're dying a death that will not last. This hopelessness between us will soon be our distant past. Maybe we will find our world.
Yankee Girl by Stevie Salas from his CD, Be What It Is. School mascots are under review in Ontario and BC. In Ontario, there have been concerns over Chippewa Secondary School's mascot, Joe Raider, which Superintendent Kelly Brown of the school board admits is a First Nations caricature, and that mascot is being pulled and a new one is being created. And in BC, Vancouver School Board Trustee Jane Bowie says Aboriginal-themed mascots are detrimental to students' learning and reinforces negative stereotypes, and she has put forward a motion to review all mascots in the province. But first we hear from Kelly Brown, Near North School Board Superintendent.
There has been certainly some concerns expressed to us about the mascot, and the mascot is a caricature, and it had, as it stood, it did have some features that were of concern to certainly First Nations communities.
So what is the school board doing with respect to these concerns?
We found it to be, and the school has been working on this, both the students and the staff at school. We felt it was a very teachable moment for our kids, and what they did was they've taken the concerns very seriously, and they're getting concerns expressed from both sides. Of course, the historical side, the people that have gone to the school, and of course, from not only First Nations peoples, but a number of different sources expressing concern over the mascot. So what they're doing is they have suspended the use of the mascot, and they are trying to, or they're working towards a solution that will come up with a mascot that will be respect for any group, that it's a mascot that doesn't depict anybody in any negative way.
Okay, and I just happened to be reading the story in the Sioux Star, and you're quoted there saying that the situation is being taken seriously, and on the surface that you can make quick changes, but like other schools that have animals as mascots, people for the ethical treatment of animals could come to them.
Well, certainly they didn't capture the complete quote, so I want to make that very clear. What I did say is we are taking it very seriously, and we are looking at, this is an opportunity for us as educators to look at all our mascots, and there's probably other groups we have to be sensitive to. I'm not comparing another. I'm just saying it is an issue, an opportunity for us to examine all our mascots and logos and make sure that we're sensitive and we're not depicting anybody in a negative way. That particular quote did not capture that. We want to look beyond this one instance, and we want to look at all of our schools and make sure we promote tolerance and respect.
Okay, because I was going to say that people aren't the same as animals.
No, absolutely, and that's not what, again, did capture the quote. That's in no way what was meant. It was meant that, you know, we need to look at everything that we do, because you're absolutely right. There's no comparison there, but let's look at all our logos and all our practices and make sure that we do promote respect and tolerance.
That was Kelly Brown, a superintendent with the Near North District School Board in Ontario, talking about the Chippewa Secondary School mascot. Meanwhile, there is a small Facebook group dedicated to saving that mascot. Now we go to BC, where Vancouver School Board Trustee Jane Bowie has put forward a motion to review all mascots in that province, something important, she says, since the province has been working on Aboriginal enhancement programs.
The motion that we passed is one that we'll take forward to the BC School Trustee AGM, annual AGM, that comes up in April, towards the end of April, the weekend of the 22nd. And our motion is that the BCSTA call upon all school districts to stop promoting the stereotypical representation of Aboriginal people through the use of sports mascots.
With those mascots, what do you think that does for Aboriginal students, or not for Aboriginal students?
Well, I think that it can be extraordinarily humiliating, and it trivializes Aboriginal culture and experience. It undermines the learning environment for all students.
We know that the sports mascots has been an issue in the U.S. for quite some time, and what made you decide to bring this motion forward?
I was over time, I was asked by a number of people in the Aboriginal community that you know, were concerned about it as an issue, and you know, just mentioned to me, and struck me as an opportunity, particularly in BC at this time, because we're in the process, like the school boards across the province have been signing Aboriginal enhancement agreements, Aboriginal education enhancement agreements, and it's and really working hard to try and turn things around and develop an authentic engagement with Aboriginal culture and really meeting the needs of Aboriginal students in public schools. And it seems sort of crazy to be working in that direction and not moving out practices that aren't consistent with all those positive developments.
Mm-hmm. So what kind of mascots are out there in some of the BC schools that would be discriminatory or stereotypical?
From what I understand, they're the same as in other places, people playing Indian and that sort of thing.
Okay, because I know here in Ontario, the Near North Board of Education is kind of going through the same thing with the Chippewa Secondary School mascot, and it's, you know, the feathers and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Would you happen to know how many of those kinds of mascots are out there in BC?
No, I don't. I mean, I know that it exists, but that it's not common. But feel that even though it's not a common thing, that it's our responsibility to take a leading role in tackling the issue. I found it strange though that it's become as big a story as it has. It didn't occur to me that it would be. I just put it forward and thought it seemed like just sort of a natural motherhood issue, and instead I'm a lot of media call on it. And
well,
it's unfortunate because Ken Clement, who's Aboriginal and another trustee on the board, is out of town right now, so he's not able to take the calls, although he's very supportive of the motion. And the only reason it was I that moved it is because the way our committee structure works is that I'm the chair of the committee that it came out of, so I'm the one that moves it when it gets to the board.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a motion that reflects a collective position.
That was Jane Bowie, a trustee with the Vancouver School Board, on her motion to review Aboriginal-themed mascots in the province because the negative images trivializes Aboriginal culture. 26 non-native residents in the Ganawage Mohawk Territory in Quebec near Montreal have been given notices to leave the community. That has sparked some debate in media. Some editorials say the move is a racist one, but according to Joe Delarande, a spokesperson for the Mohawk Council of Ganawage, it was a move to help preserve Aboriginal culture in the community.
First of all, people are using the term eviction notices. We're not using that term at all. We're reminding people of what the law is, and that people who are not eligible to live here should, you know, consider their options and move on. This is something that is no surprise to the people who live in Ganawage, including the people who are affected. Our laws have been in place now since the removal of the Indian Act back about 9 years or so. Our laws have been amended a couple of times since then, and as it currently stands, people who are not eligible to live here are, it's very clear that these are non-native people and that they should not supposed to be here.
So what makes them ineligible to live there? They didn't go through a residency policy or?
Well, basically, if you read the law, even the old Indian Act was the same thing. In the old days, they were called reserves. Reserved for native people. We live on a postage stamp of 13,000 acres. The community has said time and time again that we're worried about losing our language and culture, and as such, the influx that of non-native people that we would see, should we just allow things to go the way they were going, was going to overwhelm our culture and language, and we'd really have left. The reality is we are surrounded by Quebec. Montreal is right across the river. If I look out my window, I can see it. And we have other suburban towns surrounding us. So we are squeezed here. And, the reality is it was very easy for people to meet and fall in love with somebody from somewhere else. The only thing we're saying is that they, the person not from Ganawaga is not allowed to reside here. That's it. They're not allowed. There's nothing that says they can't live together. They just can't live together here.
Do you feel like you're going to be losing members with a policy like this?
There are concerns about this. There are certain realities that everybody understands, but it's been discussed for years and years over here, and the vast majority of people, I would say, are very supportive of it. There were surveys that were done that were independent of the Mohawk Council, or informal polls or phone calls. People understand the law and why it's there, and that we've been told for forever that if you marry out, well, you're expected to move out. And how it impacts on numbers, well, the real concern here is about numbers. It's about having our identity as to who we are. Otherwise, at some point, grave danger of just losing that identity. Remember, we're not a remote reserve where there's very little contact with the outside. We are surrounded, and this is all we have left. There's nowhere else for us to move to. And reality being what it is, many people fall in love with people from outside, but hey, they can move to those surrounding communities. They can continue to work here. They can visit every single day if they like. Some media outlets have said of racism. It is nothing to that. It's nothing like that at all. It's just a matter of residency. If you are Mohawk of Ganawaga, you can stay here. If you're with someone else who is not, then the options are to go somewhere else.
I also understand that your community has been going through a revitalization of language and culture. How long has that been going on?
That's been going on for probably about 35 to 40 years now, where it's really taken on a life of its own. We now have a couple of immersion schools. All of the schools teach language and culture. We have a couple of them are immersion schools. We have through high school, even adults. Every year we have a program where adults can take a year off work and immerse themselves in language and come out as speakers. So it's been there's been a lot of work done in that department. A few years now, we've gone from the point where I think the Mohawk language was endangered in Ganawaga to the point now where we're comfortable that we're turning the corner, and more younger people are speaking the language, or at least have a really good knowledge of it.
And having the non-Mohawk people in your community is endangering that process.
Well, like I said, it's you have to look at the history of all of this. Most of us know, if you remember the First Nations Governance Act that was proposed a few years ago, pamphlets that the Canadian government put out there specifically mentioned that the Indian Act was designed to assimilate Canada's native people. With that in mind, our people here in Ganawaga have no part of that, and that's why we created our own laws. We're not going to abide by a law that is made to have us disappear into the mist. And so our laws were created. Are they perfect? No. Everybody knows that. There are hearts that will be broken and people that will be upset. But the fact is, the majority of the people here have supported this law, and was actually created by the people in this community by virtue of consultation after consultation for years. This continues to develop and evolve.
That was Joe Delarond, spokesperson for the Mohawk Council of Ganawaga in Quebec. He was speaking on the recent notices sent out to non-Native residents in the community asking them to leave the territory. Now here's Only As a Heart Would Dare from Susan Aglukark from her CD Blood Red Earth.
Mana tau tu puna.
Of teachers from the Toronto Catholic District School Board are heading to Northern Ontario. They'll be participating in an educational and cultural conference at Moose Factory. Teacher Brenda Stewart is with the Toronto Catholic District School Board, and she says the conference, the Great Moon Gathering, is an opportunity to learn as well as teach.
Several years ago, about 2003, the principal or the administration at the school in Attawapiskat contacted me. Again, because they had heard about our reading intervention program, and they thought that that would be a good fit for the kids in their school, and so they wanted to learn more. So the administration and some teachers came down, met me, and that began a relationship that started in 2003. And so I've been working with them in literacy mode and with professional development. Last year, I went up to Attawapiskat twice, once in November, and I took a team of six people up there, and we delivered professional development for 2 days to their teachers from K to 12. And then I went back again in March with a team of four people, and we worked right in the presence with the teachers, working on in a coaching model where we were co-teaching with the teachers in the primary division. And so the principal of J.R. Nacogee School at that time, well, it still is Stella Wesley, and so she put our name forward to come to the Great Moon Gathering because it's going to serve the broader community rather than just the one community. She put our name forward, and so then the conference committee approached me, and so then I put a thing out to the people in my board And I said, who's interested? And this many people came forward. So I have 12 people from Toronto Catholic going to be going up there to deliver literacy and math, literacy and numeracy, I guess, workshops. And also extended a little further, and I have two people from the Toronto District School Board who also are interested in going up and delivering programs. Actually, these are people from their Aboriginal Education Office, and so they're going to be doing more workshops related to that. And then I got three people from Free the Children, because our board is closely associated and does a lot of work with Craig Kielberger's foundation, Free the Children. And so they are very, very excited to be able to come along as well. And so I have three people from Free the Children who are going to be coming up and doing workshops with the youth in there, up there, rather, at the conference, and hoping that they can establish some more networks to do further work with the First Nation communities in the north of Ontario.
Okay, and on your previous trips to Attawapiskat, what did you learn while you were there?
Well, we were going into J.R. Nakaji Portable School, and that's also another thing that I've sort of been involved with since I first met the people from Attawapiskat, or the teachers, rather, was the fight for the new school. We've done a lot of work down here towards that end as well, and so that was one of the things. We happened to be up there in March during the demolition of the old building, and It was a difficult thing to be exposed to that and to understand that the whole community was exposed to that level of toxins in the air, where we ourselves were getting sick, headaches, and that sort of a feeling. So there was a great disrespect, I think, for the community in the way the school has been dealt with for the last many years and the demolition itself at that time. So that was something that we did experience while up there. We're very, very excited, not so much about our presentations, although we will do an excellent job, but of the experience of what we're going to get. The whole team is so excited. People are saying to me they can't even sleep the night before the trip. They're so excited about going up there. And I think it's about seeing a different setting, seeing that are working in a different setting, learning about life in the north. It's something that none of us are really that familiar with, and so for us it's going to be learning about the Meshkekwak people, some of the stuff that's going on up there, some of their cultural things, because I think that at the Great Moon Gathering that there is going to be some celebration kind of things that we're going to be learning from, and people's experience teaching up there, and also what are the challenges of teaching the kids up there? How can we learn, first of all, about what's going on? What are the challenges of moving these kids further along in their education, particularly literacy? That's our focus. And what can we do down here to make their voice louder, so that we can help them as well?
Mm-hmm.
But I think that what we're going to be learning, our own personal growth, I think is the bigger thing for us.
That was Brenda Stewart, a teacher with the Toronto Catholic District School Board. Batchewana First Nation is the latest community in Ontario to be approved for the First Nations Market Housing Fund Credit Enhancement Program. Deborah Taylor is the executive director, and she says the program means First Nation citizens on reserve will have an easier time to apply for a mortgage loan or loans to repair their homes.
We were created by the federal government. We're a nonprofit trust company located in Ontario, First Nations across Canada, to help attract private financing for on-reserve housing, for home ownership, for rental, for renovation. And we also provide some capacity development funding to help strengthen First Nation governments in the areas of financial management, governance, and community commitment.
Okay, and how is this program exactly going to work for Batchewana?
The way it will work is that we will provide credit enhancement or backing for Batchewana for their loan taken out by their members so that they can get access to good terms and conditions.
Okay, so is it similar to collateral?
Yes, it is. It's a replacement security, if you will. In an off-reserve setting, if an individual goes to borrow from the bank, they usually pledge their land and their house as collateral. But on reserve, that can happen. And so what we try to do is find an alternate way to attract lenders to lend to First Nation people who are qualified but are living on reserve or on settlement lands where appropriate.
Okay, and what will this exactly mean to First Nation citizens in Batchewana?
It will mean that they have an alternative option to help meet their housing needs. So for people who would choose to, they could qualify to buy a home in the community, to build a home in the community, or to renovate an existing home that they own already.
This is the fourth community, am I right, for the program?
This is the fourth community to be announced. It is the first community in Ontario to be approved for the backing of the First Nations Market Housing Fund. We announced three other communities in 2009. They were Maui Puke in Newfoundland, Member 2 in Nova Scotia, and Lac La Ronge Indian Band in Saskatchewan. And we expect to be announcing more communities in the next couple of months.
So the fund is still quite relatively new, but how has it been working so far?
The you're correct. The fund is new. We've been open for about 20 months. Currently, the momentum is building. We have about 20 applications from First Nations and promises of more to come. I would say that the interest is increasing. I think that the First Nations are seeing that this is a valid option that can help meet the needs of their members and meet community goals. And we also, in providing the capacity development funding, are able to help them strengthen and expand their operations even more with respect to market-based housing. So I'd say it's well received.
Excellent. And how important is a program such as this one to address housing on reserve?
I think that it's extremely important to have options and to ensure that First Nation people living on reserve have the same opportunities and responsibilities for housing as other Canadians do.
That was Deborah Taylor, Executive Director of the First Nations Market Housing Fund Credit Enhancement Program. Now here's War Party with Lyrical Powwow from their CD, The Rain.
We came to represent, it's so evident. Yo, who rocks the spot? It's the lyrical powwow. We came to represent, it's so evident. Yo, who rocks the spot? Here I come to save the day. I be cool off for more partake. This native's here to stay, so don't mess with this microphone killer. I was the thriller in Manila, now I'm in the trill. Yeah, so beat the mad flow I got for all you bitches. It'll knock you down hard and leave you with stitches. I got riches to leave you bitches in jealousy. I'm a lyrical murderer, yes, a rap felony. You'll remember me when I'm on stage doing my thing. Fast as fast can be like Jack Chain. Bada bing, my style stings like OJ in a cut. If your if was a split, I'd be crazy messed up like Keith Murray. I'm catching wreck like they're in flurry. Your style stinks like curry, it'll get buried in a hurry. I don't allow that type of shit on my block. I kick a flim flam and don't forget which kid rocks the spot. Now watch me drop your style like a baby drops a bottle. Full speed on the throttle, I ain't no role model. But I thought I told you to respect me like your daddy. Now I'm rolling large and I rock the jam steady. I had your click, even your mom's in check. I don't pack no tech, just lyrics to get respect. Now watch and listen to how we all get down, huh? And welcome to the lyrical powwow.
It's the lyrical powwow.
We came to represent, it's so evident.
Yo, who rocks the spot? It's the lyrical powwow.
We came to represent, it's so evident.
Yo, who's the spot?
Remember me, supposedly fell off woods of a weakling. But really I was seeking competition away from home. But joins now populate this thing called rap for real. Appeal with the East West shit, fucking hypocrites. I'm through the splinters, fiction don't need no hook. Just a mixer and a record player. The hey-ya, stereotypes, if that's all you see. Soon your monotone will turn red. I'll toss my mic and rap to your head. Pimps, players, hustlers, Jerry Springer, they're all the same. Exploiters of the real, need someone else to play the game. Everywhere the sun examines, pledge my red style rap. The real
plains represent her. In the bush with a gap, in the bush with a gap. Get the homonymous shit. Bitch, whore, cunt, caboose, they're all anonymous with. You, your crew, and all you do, you came in this for the money. What would you do when the money gets in you and takes your honey? In other words, without the rap, motherfuckers say shit. Take away this mic, you know, when all that's left is a bitch. Fuck Hussein, I got ammunition as he's seeking. Remember me, supposedly for life, what's up a weakling?
It's the lyrical power.
We came to represent,
it's so evident. Yo, who rocks the spot?
It's the lyrical power.
We came to represent, it's so evident. Yo, who rocks the spot?
Because you can't deal with the funk I drop. I put the hip in the hop, and know what hits don't stop. I so like a hawk, I'm a real chief rocker. Style more tasty than that Betty Crocker. So deep when I drop it, you know you can't stop it. I grab the microphone and add flavor to the topic. I'm a funky DJ acting, crazy skills packing. Everybody's clapping when this DJ is rapping. I talk with, I'm more to get done. He high walkie getting a knock a jai wa. So squats me, I sin when I begin with it. The rhymes that I find in my mind, and it's time to rock the spot with the rhymes that I got. Cause it's so damn hot, they keep hiding pop. Phase, chronically addictive, this wicked. That's the reason why I came to kick it. For my Native American nation, I represent the funk on the reservation. No, you never ever heard rhymes like these ones that I done, son. For this lyrical power, it's the lyrical power.
We came to represent,
it's so evident. Yo, who rocks the spot? It's the lyrical power.
We came to represent,
it's so evident. Yo, who rocks the spot?
Nobody can do this like a woman can. You think you're the man, I got the mic in my hand. You got to understand that your style should begin. It's the girly MC from the Turtle Island. Rhymes like a 747. Style so fly, I make you think that you in heaven. My rhymes hit your town like an F5 twister. You better call the sister.
There's American Idol and Canadian Idol, and now Powwow Idol. Well, Powwow Idol is not that new. This is the second year for the event, and it has some great prizes for the winning drum group. Paul Gowder is the organizer of the event and owner of powwows.com. He's based in the U.S.
This is the second time doing it, and I don't like the show on TV. We're trying to find the best powwow drum group out there, and it's open to all the drum groups who haven't been signed to any kind of recording contract already, and across U.S. and Canada, and they compete in a number of rounds, and people can go to the website or vote via text messaging and Twitter, and each round one drum is eliminated, and we keep going until we have a winner. We just finished round three, and round four voting starts on Monday.
Okay, so how many groups had started, and how many groups are there now?
Okay, we started with 12 groups, and we've now eliminated three, so we're moving right along. But we started 12 great drum groups from U.S. and Canada.
So who's left in the running now?
Oh, goodness, let's see. We have Tribe Called Mi'kmaq, which I hope I pronounced that right, guys. Chippewa Travelers, Medicine Tail, Soldier Hill, Southern Sun, Plains Drifters, Thunder Valley, Wind Eagle, and Windy Grass.
And so how many are from Canada and how many are from the U.S.? I recognize two of them from Canada.
I know that two of them are. It might be three from Canada. I'm not sure offhand, but I do know two of them are from up there.
Yeah, the Mi'kmaq and the Chippewa Travelers.
Right. And one others. I'm looking through their profiles now. We've got some from North Carolina and Oklahoma, and this one's from Wisconsin.
So about the drum groups, how widely known is this contest? Or do they get a recording contract at the end?
Well, the winner, it has pretty good prize package. They're going to get a recording contract from Drum Hop Productions, which is a big powwow recording label, and they'll get a CD fully produced by those guys. They also be invited to be one of the drums at the 2011 Gathering of Nations. They get 20 nights free stay in any Motel 6 in North America, kind of help out their travel expenses. They get to go on a cruise. Powwows.com is actually going to build them a website to help them improve themselves, and they also get a custom-built powwow drum.
Wowee, that's an excellent prize package.
Yeah, it's quite a good deal.
So those 20 nights in a hotel, is that a specific hotel chain, and can they break it all up? Because I know the powwow trails are pretty long and arduous during the season.
Yes, they can break it up however they want. That was given by one of our sponsors, so it's at Motel 6. We're very fortunate to have some great sponsors. Like I said, Drum Hop's doing the CD. Gathering of Nations is a sponsor, Motel 6, Paul Cruz, and Tribal Spirit is the one who make the drummers.
Excellent. And have you had more response this time around than the last time you ran the contest?
Oh, yeah. A lot more response. We really weren't sure what it was and if it was even a real contest. You know, that's kind of too good to be true. But the first drum group that won was Standing Horse, and they've done very well and sold a lot of copies of their CD. And because of the Powwow Idol, they've gotten a lot of publicity and some other sponsorships because of it, and really helped them out in their traveling. So I think now more drum groups were really willing to jump into the contest. And the voting this time has been just hundreds and hundreds of more votes than we had the first time. I think the last round we had something like almost 5,000 votes, I believe.
So do you think things like Facebook or Twitter help?
Oh, yes. You know, social networking, that's the way people get the word around now. And you know, things travel fast in the powwow circuit. Facebook, Twitter, MySpace, all these things really help spread the word even faster. So, and this time we included the ability for people to cast votes using either text messaging or Twitter or going to the website. So we really opened up the voting so that just about anybody can cast a vote.
And you also have clips on your website to hear every one of those drum groups that are in the contest.
Yes, each round we have a different theme for the round. So like I said, round is getting ready to start, and the northern drums are going to be singing a crow hop, and the southern drums are going to be singing a trot song. And so they'll send in their song to me, to us, and we put that up where you can listen to it on the website. You can also download it via iTunes, you know, put it on your MP3 player and listen to them all and figure out who you want to vote for.
That was Paul Gowder, Powwow Idol organizer. You've been listening to Bomb Siddaw with Jennifer Ashwasage. Bomb Siddaw is an Aboriginal news magazine program which includes current affairs, arts and entertainment, and a cross-genre of music from Aboriginal artists. Bomb Siddaw means walking together in the Anishinaabe language. Music for the program is courtesy of Burnt Project One. If you have comments or story ideas, visit my website at bombsedaw.com. That's B-A-M-O-S-E-D-A. And thanks for listening to Bomb Siddaw.